You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Peter Atchison. Peter, thanks so much for being with me today.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Peter, we're talking about your show, of course, at Anton Kern, and I'm really looking forward to getting into this because the materials here are, we're talking about paintings by and large, but there's a number of materials in here, right, that aren't apparent immediately. Can you talk a little bit about this whole body of work? Because you're bringing together work over a series of years, right? This is almost like a retrospective, or would you not frame it that way?
It is over a body of years. That's true. It wasn't intended to be a retrospective in any sense of a look back or look forward. The curator, Perry Levine from the gallery, simply chose work that he thought made for an interesting group that showed several different facets of my practice over the years. I think he was more interested in variety and the variety of means, variety of materials than he was trying to choose one body of work or another to present a kind of stylistic unity. So, and I very much appreciate that he did that.
So how does that feel looking at the whole show? Because it is a type of survey of your work. And when there is a survey of work, you often see something that you never saw before, right? You don't, I would imagine, see all of these together in your studio. How do you feel about seeing all this together?
It was really enjoyable. I very much enjoyed it. And you're correct. I don't normally look at work that's 20 or 30 years old. But from the moment that I really began painting after graduating from college, after a few years of doing other forms of art, I went back to painting in around 1980. And I just had a set of ideas, and today I have exactly the same ideas, it turns out. They express themselves differently. I have a wider range of in my vocabulary, but when I look back, I'm actually quite happy with the unity of intention that runs throughout the work from 1980 to the present day. So I felt very good about the selection of work, but any other random cross-section of my paintings, I think, would have produced the same effect. But I do love the ones Perry chose, and I think he did a very, very solid curatorial job.
And so I'd love to move backwards and forwards to talk about some of these works. To begin with, there's a very early work from the 80s, Four Levels. Let's talk about this one a little bit, because it's a great piece, and in a way it's very straightforward. That title stands out too, because almost all the rest are untitled. It seems that there was something very, very specific you were after. I mean, it feels like a symbolic painting to me, this idea of four levels.
I think you're right. I would own that. At the time when I began that body of work in, let's say, between 1980 and 1983 or four, somewhere in there, I was heavily, heavily influenced by a show of Forrest Bess's work that was shown at Sonneben Gallery, I think in 1983, but right around the early 80s, there were several Forrest Bess shows. And to myself and some of my painter friends, that work was astonishing. It was a revelation. And it rang a bell in me, and your choice of the word symbolic or symbolism is correct. I was really attracted to imagery that was somewhat tantric, in a sense that one could be symbolic about spiritual matters. and but express those matters extremely plainly. That all comes really from Forrest Bess. And so somewhere along the line, I think I must have been reading Jung or something like that, or looking at tantric work, and I got the idea that there were sort of four levels of being, the lowest being the physical and the highest being the ethereal, non-incorporate level of spirit. And so it was a rather simplistic, kind of naive way to express it, but that's kind of one of the marvelous things about painting is the title helps inform the image, but if, you know, sometimes the images just remain mysterious and poetic in and of themselves. So that was what that was about.
That's so interesting. So speaking to those four levels, which right is about a number of things, right? But it's also a kind of metaphysical or spiritual outlook on life. That kind of four levels, as you evolved in terms of a painter, I mean, we're talking about 83, 84, that was made. The reference to four levels and what that means in terms of going through life, did that directly or indirectly affect other works? To jump to one very specific, there's one called Untitled 2020 that is a kind of a stick, a branch attached to a canvas that feels almost like it grew out of it. It's oil and stick on a wood block. Did that relate in any way to that kind of, you know, I know this is kind of odd, but that sort of four levels, you know, what's happening here? Are we on another level? Does it relate to that kind of idea of levels?
I wouldn't say so. I would say about that piece that from a pretty early date in terms of that period from 1980 to the present day, I was interested in collaging and introducing materials into the paintings that were not strictly paint or standard collage materials. It was an early idea of mine to kind of upset the straight format of paint on canvas. The introduction of a foreign material would give the painted part of the painting something to bounce off of. And it was a way of upsetting expectations about what an image is. And also later I began to understand that the world as we experience it as physical and full of physical objects, paint is one among many. And the materials that, you know, we encounter in our daily lives, paint's just one of them, and it's not a privileged one. So I always felt that I could see the painted part better if I, you know, juxtaposed it with a non-paint material, and that painting you reference is an example of that.
And there's another one to go back a little further, 2010 to 2012, this is oil on wood, but 10 by 6, very heavy, heavily built up surface, gestural. I mean, looks really delicious, really. It looks like something you could almost eat. It's like a wonderful, wonderful sense of movement and surface. We're bouncing around here from earliest to more recent. Now we're back to 2010-12. What was happening during this period? Because this feels to me like sometimes, you know, what might be referred to as a painter's painting, right? This is so, so luscious to look at. It's the kind of painting that you want to reach out and touch it. It has that kind of sensuality to it.
Well, I moved up, I left Brooklyn in 1997 and moved up to Columbia County and currently live in Chatham, New York, in a rather suburban, but it's really a landscape that is heavily green, a lot of trees, and the seasons are very pronounced here, the shift from season to season, and What I realized leaving the city was I began painting up here, was the lack of essentially any sharp edges, especially geometric edges from plane to plane. And I became more and more influenced by the idea of these volumes that are in present in a forest or a patch of woods, or the way open fields turn into wooded areas and then give back into, you know, rolling hills, that kind of thing. And I just began to really want to express, do a painting with no edges and express a whole reality the way you would see it if you looked at a wooded hillside. You wouldn't question that it was all one reality there, but the variation was way beyond my sort of artistic ability to illustrate. So I had to kind of come up with a way of painting that would fall into complexity without trying to be illustrative of that complexity. That's where that painting's at.
And more recent paintings seem to be a move away from that direction, right? When I look at paintings that are the most recent, that kind of complexity takes on a kind of different palette, right? Rock study was, well, that's 2023. But others seem to also have you're moving into a different palette now, right? Let's talk about the castle of the mind, which maybe relates to the four levels too. But I love the castle of the mind in terms of its title and also what you're doing there. This is quite different than what we were just talking about in terms of surface and palette, right? We're somewhere else.
Castle of Mind was one of a series of paintings that I did last year, or I've been doing over the last 2 years, and still working on that body of work, that begin with very, very thin washes. And I gave up using brushes and replaced the brush stroke with the blotting using paper towels and my hands and cloth or, you know, rags. You know, going much more towards a kind of staining of the underground to build up an image. And unlike the earlier painting we were talking about, I feel a lot more comfortable with thin, washy images. And I feel that the thickly built up oil-painted surface that I was using in that previous one we talked about was something that, while it communicates authenticity and struggle, that I wanted to go directly more towards an imaginative image, and that all that thick oil paint was in a way a wall as well as a, you know, it was an obstacle to the image really emerging clearly on its own. So in the last couple of years, I've painted very thin using lots of washes, and Castle of the Mind was just I just got lost in the painting of it. And then, typical of this body of work, while I'm working on it, I began to see an image that was a kind of, the way you'd look up into a cloud and see a castle or something. As a little kid, you'd say, oh, you know, I see a dragon, I see a horse, I see a castle. And I had been, in the last couple of years, really, really enjoying the work of James Ensor. And when I connected that image of the castle, I thought of Ensor, and I also thought of American poet Robert Bly, who has a great late poem called Stealing Sugar from the Castle. And he refers to the castle of imagination or something like that. So it just, the image came together in a sense as I conjured those references. And after I'd finished painting that day, the painting sat for a day or two, and then I felt it needed something, and I put that blue mark on the upper left just by blotting acrylic paint on a paper towel, closing my eyes, and just touching the canvas lightly. And I suppose what I would say about it is that I love letting the painting emerge on its own as an image. I'm more inclined to be patient with the images and let them come up of their own than impart consciously, you know, tell the painting what to be. So I'm glad you point that painting out. It's one of my favorites in the show.
Well, it sounds like with this painting also, or maybe with this whole series, your hands are in here more than ever, or is that not the case in terms of like the towel touching the canvas as opposed to brush, palette knife, or other objects?
Absolutely. They're really painted paintings. And because they're all generally, my work for the last 3 or 4 or 5 years has been exclusively acrylic, use of acrylic paint, which is water-based and can be thinned into beautiful washes. And at the same time, the work that one does at any moment can be blotted and erased using paper towels, which not only erase an image that maybe you went too far one way or the other, but they also create images. So you're always working with this accidental image or a blot or a Rorschach kind of free associative method of reading into the paint to find the image. And I'm loving being in that space right now.
I like that, yeah, so much. And how does it feel where you are now? You're in this space, you're outside of Brooklyn, you're in Chatham. How does the environment affect what you're doing, or does it?
Oh, it absolutely does. First of all, like I said earlier, there are very few sharp edges, that it's not a very geometric environment, and it's also one that's prone to organic patterns that overlap, intertwine, and create depth. So there's a kind of there's a depth and a complexity to the landscape, including the sky and the horizon, that I could never illustrate. So it totally lets me off the hook for having to apply any skill towards the illustration of an image. And if that's off the table, the other option, as far as I can see, is to rely completely on the interaction between one's imagination and the actual paint on the canvas. So that's where I'm at now. And when I look outside my studio window, I see exactly what I'm painting. In some crazy way, it's all the same world. One is one that's happening on my canvas, the other is happening all around the outside.
That sounds like you're in a beautiful place, really. Wonderful to be there. I want to encourage listeners to this, of course, to go see the show, get into the images we have here more, but of course the most important thing is to see this show. I want to ask you one more thing before we go a little off topic. What are you reading at the moment?
I'm reading a couple of things, but I have been I'm reading a wonderful book I highly recommend to any listener who would, you know, jive with my ideas. I'm reading a book by the Australian Aboriginal philosopher Tyson Yunkaporta called Right Story, Wrong Story. And I've read two of his other books, which I highly recommend, Sand Talk and Snake Talk. And what he presents in his writing is a really ancient worldview that seeks to restore, you know, kind of the idea of man's relationship to nature and the fact that we are reliant on nature for our lives. And he, marvelous writer, wonderful writer, and I'm really, really enjoying him right now.
That sounds great. I'd love to read that as well. Thanks so much for your time today. I wish you well with the show. I really appreciate your time with me today. Thank you so much.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.